Welcome to the Wackle Gather podcast. My name is Judy Mitchum. Wackle is an organization for top female leaders in marketing, media, and communications. In this podcast series, I will be talking to some top female leaders, women who are also known to be change makers. This podcast is being released in advance of the Wackle Gather event on the 23rd of May. It is sponsored by Whaler, the most creative influencer marketing company. My guest today is Lee Thomas, Director of Global Partnerships at Facebook. Lee is a real industry trailblazer. Before moving to Facebook, Lee climbed the ladder in some of London's leading ad agencies, such as M&C Saatchi, Abbott Mead Vickers. She became MD of Saatchi & Saatchi and then CEO of Dare, a very cool digital and innovation agency. Lee is always at the forefront of change, an early adopter, a digital guru, and a champion of new technology. A proud South African, Lee is known for her warmth, grace, and importantly, her integrity. And I can vouch for that, as I have had the pleasure of working with her in two of those agencies. Welcome to Lee.
Oh, thank you, Judy. You've given me a moment of that introduction.
Well, it's very exciting to be here at Facebook, surrounded by lots of cool people through the windows. And Lee, as we speak, is sitting in her leather jacket looking equally cool.
I was going to say I'm the exception to that. I'm sure you missed me out in that description, but anyhow, yes, they are very cool here.
They certainly are. So after all your years working in Adland, what's it like working here at Facebook?
Well, I think I'm still working in Adland, which is good. I absolutely love it. As you say, I do love being part of where things, the action is happening.
Yes.
I like being the most stupid person in the room. So you definitely experience it here, the pace of change. How intelligent and high energy everyone is over here is absolutely brilliant. And I'm genuinely surprised at this stage of my life and this stage of my career to be this excited by what I do day to day. So
how wonderful. Mm. And you've got some trailblazer women around you in the global
Just
organization.
A few.
Yeah, Sheryl Sandberg and people.
Yeah. The Carolyn Everson and Nicola Mendelssohn. I am spoilt for choice, and many Wacklers, the likes of Caitlin Ryan and then obviously Philippa Snare. So I'm very lucky. It's one of those environments where women are definitely made to feel welcome, and I guess that is significant for me as well.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
So let's go back a bit to your early years. Obviously, you
only a couple of years ago.
Only a couple of years. Yes, born in South Africa, beautiful country.
Yes.
And your first love was actually for ballet.
Mm.
And that's why I used the word grace in my introduction of you, because grace seems to be a word that does describe you in everything about you and your composure. Tell us about your early careers and ballet and how important that was for you.
Yes, I do have an unusual CV. I actually had a diagnosis of femoral antiversion when I was 5 years old. So I had both my femurs were growing incorrectly, and I had to have major surgery, and I was incapacitated for 3 months, and then I was in a wheelchair and crutches for a year of my life. And at five, that's a significant period of time. As part of my recovery, it was suggested that I do some physio and do some ballet lessons. So at 6 years old, after my second ballet lesson, I think I told my mum then that I'd very much like to be a ballerina, and of course she just laughed. But I think, you know, something in that story, in a nutshell, suggests something of my temperament, which is I do like challenges.
Yeah.
I do think that pretty much from day one, I recognized hard work and what it took to be committed to some sort of mission beyond myself. And in this instance, it was the arts. And I have to say, whilst I don't have a traditional background, I think dance and anyone who's committed to something like that recognizes the discipline, the stuff that happens underneath the surface. I'm very flattered that you think that I'm graceful. I'm not sure I feel that I come across that way all the time, because it's certainly not how it feels on the inside. But again, you know, as a dancer, you're taught to present a point of view and to present an artistry without showing the effort. And I think that's helpful in life generally, actually.
Yes. And it probably explains why you're such a good presenter, because you're used to, you started out early on the stage.
Used to spotlights, yes. It doesn't make me any less nervous, though, I have to say.
You never come across as nervous, I have to say. Why did you move to England then? Tell us.
That's a love story, Judy, you know.
Is it your lovely husband?
My lovely husband, who is Welsh, couldn't find himself a girlfriend in the UK, is what we always explain. And we met in Cape Town when he was on holiday there, and I took this leap of faith in our relationship. He was struggling to give up his business over here to come and join me in South Africa, so I made a leap of faith, thinking at the very worst, and this actually is another defining characteristic, at the very worst, you can always go back. My mum always said that to me. If it doesn't work out, you can always come back, love. So a lot of my instinct for trying out new things and taking leaps of faith has been around, well, as long as I know it's not a reckless decision, as long as I know that there is a sort of a ground base of support and something to go back to, what harm can it do to try something new? So I tried something new, which was London. And here I am 18 years later, still here.
So you moved for love.
I moved for love.
And somehow you managed to get into London's hotly contested ad industry. How did you do that?
I think you might have been one of the second people I met in London, actually, Judy, so you'll know how green I was when I got off that boat. I was very lucky because I think I met a couple of headhunters and they've all said to me, look, with your experience in South Africa, minimal, you're unlikely to get a job in the UK. You need a totally different type of experience. And I was very, very lucky because a friend of mine knew Murray McLennan, and he took the time to interview me, and I guess he must have taken a leap of faith because I got a job at M&C Saatchi.
Working on Rover. Yes.
I don't obviously didn't Rover do a very cars. Good job. They no longer exist, but there we go. Everyone has a story.
Yeah, because you worked on, so you went from ballet to working on Rover, which is probably not that much of a link.
No, not obvious. I spent a lot of time doing test drives and driving. I've done a lot of auto experience since, actually. But no, I've had a fantastically diverse... it's one of the joys of being in agency land, isn't it? I was sort of autos. I did British Airways for a while. I did quite a bit of FMCG, a little bit of tech, a little bit of telco. It's like doing an MBA, isn't it, working in agency land? And I still think anyone who's considering a career in agency should consider that, because there are very few people who can be that as broad-based and deep at the same time. And that stood me in good stead. I sort of went from there to Lowe and ran Tesco for a while, and ended up at Saatchi & Saatchi doing some incredible work with some great creatives. And really throughout, I think the binding piece without my careers has been this genuine appreciation of the power of creativity, which still stands true. No matter that I'm sat in Facebook or Saatchi & Saatchi, the quantifiable difference in what works in terms of marketing is great creative. So that's always been another motivator. And I think having come from being a creative myself, it's probably given me more empathy for that part of the process. We can put as much data and marketing science and planning behind stuff, but unless the work itself is crafted and with big ideas at the heart of it, you know, you're at risk of just trying to buy people's time and attention. So it's been a great part of the process.
It's interesting because we obviously worked together at M&C Saatchi and were reunited at Lowe.
Yes.
By which time...
I think I followed you around, Judy.
By which time you were leading Activation, which in those days, Activation was the coolest word in town.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you talk about creativity and yet you're always at the forefront of technology and, you know, the latest thing. Mm. How have you managed to keep abreast and be such an early adopter of change?
Yeah. I think I'm just genuinely curious. Yeah. It's not a hardship for me to sit on a weekend and read articles in TechCrunch or experiment with a new piece of technology. I'm also quite comfortable asking lots of stupid questions and making myself vulnerable to ask lots of stupid questions. So my product teams over here will know how, and marketing science teams will know, actually most teams, how comfortable I am in saying, I don't quite understand. Can you just stop that and explain it to me again? And it's not because I'm trying to do anything other than genuinely understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's not a hardship. That is just, I think, you know, one of the most meaningful moments to me when I first arrived at Facebook, nearly 3 years ago now, is I was privileged enough to be in a room of about 100 people meeting Mark Zuckerberg. And somebody asked him this brilliant question. I wish I had been that person. They said, what is the type of person you hire to Facebook? And as a noob, I was sitting there going, oh, quite interested in this because we're so clever, yeah. And he went, no, actually, what I'm really looking for is people who are the most eager to learn. And that really sort of reinforced in me that that is a really powerful quality. If you want to be competing in today's world, just being interested in keeping abreast and learning faster is kind of the competitive advantage, because you're going to make mistakes, you're going to get things wrong, but as long as you're learning from those and learning faster than the rest, you can keep pace with what's happening in consumer behavior, if nothing else.
So, and is that what you'd call a protagonist mindset?
Yes, I do think that is part of the protagonist. You know, I like that. I am trying to find a way to talk to some of my friends in industry about this without sounding like I'm lecturing, but you do see a very distinct two types in the industry right now. You get the victim versus the protagonist.
Yes.
And there's lots of good sort of academic work done in this place, but I think particularly in thinking about children at schools, thinking about us in business, you'll know this from GDSD, I think, is we are in such a fast-changing environment. You can either sit there and feel a victim of it and complain and create more polarization and put yourself in certain camps and retrench, or you can make a choice, and I think it is quite an interesting psychological shift into going, I want to be a protagonist in this landscape. I want to be learning faster. I don't mind if I make mistakes as long as I'm learning from them, and I want to be part of this new thing.
Mm.
And if that means I have to be open to new ideas, if I have to try new things, if I have to take an extra couple of hours a day to learn and read and put myself in situations where I'm less comfortable, that's okay. Let go of the past. I think what really epitomizes it for me is Donald Trump's red caps with Make America Great Again. You know, there's a bunch of people in our business right now going, let's make advertising great again. I'm sorry, that world is gone. You know, it's time for us to create a new version of that with our growth mindset and set out a much bigger vision for what our business can be doing.
It's very refreshing to hear you talk about how you ask questions and you're not afraid to look like you're, you know, ignorant of the answer.
Mm.
Because a lot of women feel they have to put on this veneer of being armor plated and just perfect, and you're happy to let that side down and show the real you in the interests of learning.
Yes, I think I acquired this reasonably late in my career.
Right.
I think the truth is, when you're a young woman, particularly in ad agencies, there is this pressure to be perfect and to be smarter and to be on it and know the answers. And I think probably for a bunch of young men as well, actually. The business is high pressurized, it's highly competitive. I think with experience and some inner self-confidence, which has been the biggest challenge.
Yes.
You know, you get to the point where you go, actually, I'm probably good enough to go, I'm not perfect.
Yes. Well, we have a young man in the room, actually, and I wondered, Andrew from Mediacom is here helping us today. Do you feel the pressure to be perfect, Andrew?
I think people feel the pressure to be perfect, but you can't be perfect, so I don't know why people strive to be perfect. Mm. And I think it's the imperfections that make that create the value. You know, because everyone's different, everyone's imperfect in their own way. And if diversity is not about skin colour, it's not about religion, it's about different points of view.
Yeah.
And the diversity comes from the imperfections, and that's where the quality new world of growth marketing comes from, I think.
Yeah, and it's definitely a new mindset for our, you know, young women coming up through the ranks now, because actually, you know, years ago, everyone put on this veneer of you know, everything's perfect.
I remember us
invincibility.
Both. Yes, if you fell pregnant, God help you. Or if your child was sick, I think we've both been through this together.
Yes.
What do you do? Who do you tell? How honest can you be about the fact that you're stressed, that your child is sick at home?
Yes.
We've both all been there, you know. And
well, let's talk about when you fell pregnant, because you have got two lovely children, Cammy and Graydon.
Yes.
But it hasn't all been plain sailing, because maternity leave caused you quite a lot of anguish.
I would say over both pregnancies, there were different versions of that, and I don't particularly want to get into too much detail, but I would say there was an absolute bias that as soon as I fell pregnant that I would go on the mummy track. I remember in inverted commas that was part of the conversation. I remember you being a real mentor to me the first time it happened, actually. Thank you, Judy. And a bunch of other wacklers, actually, just really leaning in to support me through that. And then I probably over-indexed as soon as I got back from maternity leave in trying to prove myself, and prove that I was still in the running for a career, because I really wanted one and to be a mum. And there was definitely a bias that even for those 3-4 months that I was going to try and take out for pregnancy, that I would somehow be a lesser employee. Being pregnant, I was pulled off of pitches. You know, there was all sorts of nonsense. And, you know, that's quite a painful period to go through for women. And I don't know that we speak about it enough. I don't know that businesses acknowledge how much anxiety that women go through during this period. And yes, of course, men as becoming parents, there's a process of, you know, evolution and lifestyles change. But I think for a woman, the vulnerability of what goes on in during that period, and how impervious a bunch of people were to that vulnerability,
yes,
was shocking. And so I'm genuinely hoping with the Me Too movement, with this new focus on, you know, stop with the NDAs and stop with, what do they call them, non-disclosures and all that stuff. And actually genuinely all of us need to lean in to solve this issue so that women can have babies, come back and actually add value in the workplace. And I would argue, actually, coming back from having my second baby, I have been more valuable. I'm much more high impact. I'm much more focused on the things I will do. And there's a whole bunch of stuff I'll say no to, which I would never have had the confidence to do before I had kids.
I remember when you came back from having had Cammy.
Yes.
And you came back all guns blazing and won a major pitch.
We did.
Within about...
We did.
We did.
With Mr. Morris.
Delivering millions of pounds of incremental revenue for the agency.
Yes.
So, you know, it's interesting because... You know, we all go through that worry, and yet you were able to come back and triumph, which I remember being quite a significant moment in at Lowe, that was. Mm. So, and do you think it's changed now? Do you think the world has changed for the women coming through and who are having children and work-life balance being an issue for them as well?
You know, I am slightly... blinded by the fact that I now work in Facebook, where I would say the focus on talent and looking after our talent is very well renowned for being outstanding. Mm-hmm. And you have to be, if you're competing for the best tech talent in particular, you have to be offering the best and most empathetic benefits for working in a business if you're competing for the best. It's not just that we're competing for other agency talent, we're competing for Google, we're competing for those Harvard graduates, the computer science people who's 14 years old, the guys developing AI, etc. And so what I find really fascinating about our culture and the systems in place is there's a huge amount of empathy, there's a huge amount of trust. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think the biggest problem we have is because there's so many A-type personalities is people tend to just work 24/7.
Yeah.
And that has a more of an impact. It's less about the maternity cover, and the paternity cover, which we do have for all the blokes as well as the girls, the ladies. It's much more about how do I be the most peak performance version of myself without burning out. And so there's an initiative called Fuel, which Carolyn Everson was the founder of, and which I fundamentally believe in, which is you find out what fuels you and your highest performing version of yourself, which means we are empowered to work from home when we want to. We are empowered to say, this is my vision for this year. I am going to get pregnant this year, and you guys need to allow me some time and space to be healthy and not travel as much, etc. You can set out visions. You can tell your teams about what you want to achieve personally, in terms of community, in terms of your professional life. And the business will do everything it can to allow you that space because it trusts you to be performing at your highest based on those desires. So it really recognizes the whole human rather than just...
It also recognizes your motivations because motivational mapping is so helpful.
Totally that. Yeah. Totally that. And, you know, if some people like to spend their weekends sitting there geeking out on a bit of code.
Yeah.
You can't tell them not to do that.
Yes.
You know, so it's a much more holistic view on what it takes to enjoy your work and life together.
Yes.
And I think that's really important for women because if we can leapfrog to our business, I don't think we're there yet. I don't think agencies a lot of businesses and brands are there, and sometimes we're not there, fact, you know. But if we can leapfrog to 5 years hence, where we're thinking about you as an individual and what your motivations are and how to bring out the best in you, wouldn't that be a brilliant vision for our business?
Yes.
And it's, you know, there's
it's also a vision based on trust, isn't it? Because you have to trust the individual. You have to motivate them enough and trust them enough for them to deliver back.
Yeah, and that is the big caveat, obviously. You need to be able to trust people to do that, the people around you.
So as well as being an industry leader, you are also the co-chair of Wackel Gather.
I am.
on the 23rd of May.
Not nervous at all. No pressure. Just reminded me.
And in fact, straight from here, you go into a meeting with the Gather Committee, and will no doubt be sorting out the lineup of amazing speakers.
Yes.
So as co-chair of Gather,
perhaps
you can tell us a bit about what Gather is and why you think it is a valuable day.
I may be biased, but I think Gather is one of the most wonderful initiatives driven by a bunch of us who are busy women to give back to a community. And there's two versions of that community. There are the 500-odd women that we'll have in the room on the day who are coming from all levels within our business and who are ambitious and maybe challenged in certain aspects, but all who see the purpose of the club and recognize this desire and need to drive gender equality. We do have this unique purpose within our business. Hopefully we don't need Wackel in 20 years' time. Goodness, you never know. But right now we do need to have the gender agenda on the agenda. Too many agendas there. and then I think the other community around that is all the people overhear these conversations. And I think Wackel opening up our knowledge, you know, of what we've been through, but opening up our black books and bringing in other inspiring, brilliant women, so that at the end of that day, a bunch of women will walk out that much taller because they've learned something, they feel like they want to campaign for something, and that they feel supported by each other, because we're going through quite similar challenges, aren't we?
Yeah.
So it's a really powerful and motivating thing to be in. I'm very humbled to be involved with it. It's long, hard hours, isn't it?
Yes.
Very rolled up sleeves. But that's all good. And then obviously NABS and Mind have enormous amounts of money that they gain off the back of the event, which is no small thing. And it makes me super proud to be involved.
Yes. And I certainly noticed that all the women that do go to it come out feeling incredibly boosted by the day and by the advice. And it's a very positive experience. You know, whilst people are open about their careers, it's all about being positive about the future rather than...
Looking upwards.
Yes.
Looking upwards. We can all walk tall. Yes.
But talking of looking upwards, you have got a lovely daughter yourself, Cammy.
I did, the lovely Cammy.
We've referenced before. And, you know, she's coming up in the world. I'm delighted to share that she was a GDST girl in her junior school, prep school. But she's coming up in the world. And what tips would you give her now about how to get on in the world and how to have a fantastic career?
It's really interesting. We've just had a very pointed experience where, for the first time, as she's just turned 13, I've really had to think about the advice I give her. And the example I'm going to use is she put up her hand because she wanted to try for a scholarship to get into a secondary school. There's no need for her to do that, but she wanted to try for a scholarship. She got this in her head. And while she's a clever girl and she's quite sporty and she's quite good at drama, I was a bit worried because I have no idea how she is versus other children. And it was really concerning for me. I was like, am I setting her up for failure and suggesting she goes for this? You go through all this angst as a parent, don't you? And what we agreed together was, do you know what? Try. And if it doesn't work out, doesn't matter. But let's at least try. And as of last week, I'm pleased to say she got the exhibition all-rounder scholarship for St. Edward's.
Oh,
I know, and none of us were expecting it. But I think in that story is what the advice I want to give her for life. Like, and hopefully there's a lesson that will give her the confidence to do that, which is try, and you never know.
And all about having courage to
just
give things a go.
Just have the courage to go. And you know what? If it fails, it's okay as well. And you never know. You might actually get it. And she did. So I think hopefully that's definitely the piece of advice that I'm hanging on to, because I think we're going to have a challenge. We've got all the other, you know, A-levels, etc. to come. But hopefully if she keeps trying and putting in the effort, she'll do okay.
What a fantastic story. Well, on that lovely note, I would like to say a very big thank you to Lee Thomas at Facebook, to the team at Mediacom,
yes,
who've helped us put this together,
Karen,
and to the team behind the scenes at the GDST who have helped on this. And
exactly.
I off you now go to your Wackel Gather committee meeting.
Thank you,
to,
Judy.
To bring the whole thing together.
Yes.
So very good luck with that.
Oh, thank you,
thank
Judy.
You.
Enjoyed that. Thank you so much. Thanks, Andrew.